they're going to get their music played by a lot of ensembles. You know, it's one thing to spend all that kind of time and have one premiere and have it never be played again. With bands, you tend to get played a lot.
That's right. That's just part of what we can talk about this hour, because the repertoire itself is so rich and varied and filled with both male and female composers and styles. Who knows? They're probably the sky's the limit with styles here. Mm-hmm. But let me remind listeners again that the first concert is Sunday at 3 at Miller Auditorium, and it's a concert in which the Wind Symphony and the concert band will consecutively share the stage, also featuring a guest artist who I wasn't expecting, a vocalist,
yes,
coming in to perform with the Wind Symphony. And on Monday, it's the symphonic band alone at Miller Auditorium at 7:30
p.m.
Correct. Yep. And Trey, you'll be conducting that. There are some graduates. There's two graduate assistant conductors in the mix.
Right.
And of course, we need to mention Mary Land, who is the director of the concert band and couldn't be here today, but she's put together the concert band program for Sunday at 3 o'clock. And the thing that jumped out at me right away is that not one, not two, not three, but not four, but there are five female composers represented
yeah.
here.
Yeah, well, we're definitely living in a time of making people aware of all the great music out there by all people of all kinds of backgrounds, and just like everything else, just raising awareness to that there's really great quality music being written by all people from every background. And so Mary chose to do an all female composer program, which is kind of appropriate since last night the Academy Awards, the best film score, went to a female for the third time in its history.
Don't ask me to pronounce that.
Hildur Guðnadóttir or something like that.
Yeah, but that's very exciting.
Yeah. So, you know, it's great timing, and Mary has researched some really terrific pieces to share.
If I'm not mistaken, I think the live orchestra of the show was also for the first time led by a woman.
Right. Yep. That's right.
Yep. Pretty cool.
That's a good time. Yeah, so she's got all kinds of a lot of variety in the program by some really great composers, one of whom is Julie Giroux, who is a very prolific band composer. We know her music for many, many years in the band world, but she also spent a great deal of time writing for Hollywood and did a lot of the orchestrations for the Academy Awards ensemble that was led by Bill Conti, which was a famous composer, wrote the film score to Rocky, and she was her mentor.
That's
in
amazing.
Many ways.
He's mm-hmm. a master. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And she happens to be our guest composer coming up at the spring conference in April. So it kind of all comes together.
Oh,
here.
That's exciting.
Yeah.
Julie Giroux.
Giroux. Yep.
Julie. Yeah. It's kind of French.
Yes. Yeah. She's from
Louisiana.
Oh, Giroux. Her Mambo Perro Loco is going to be on the first part of the concert on Sunday. This is the concert band's performance. Other titles here are so compelling to me, like Chasing Sunlight by Kate Nishimura, and of course Pipe and Thistle.
That sounds like something right up
very
your
Celtic,
alley.
Yes.
Yeah.
I would, you know, I'll be disappointed if I don't hear, you know, a little droning
right.
little bit of some high-pitched whistling.
Another thing featuring a trombone quartet, student trombone quartet, and if you notice, they all happen to be women.
Oh my.
So there's definitely a theme. And it's an incredible quartet. These ladies just play so well, Allison, Carrie, Alexandra, and Sydney.
So just in case listeners didn't catch that, on Sunday there will be four trombonists featured in a new piece by Annalise Levesque, and those four players are female trombonists.
Yep.
And is it just them or them with
It's just
band?
Them. Yeah, they're just being featured as a number in between some of the band pieces.
But if you want to hear them with the band, that's the trombone section in the symphonic band.
Yeah, right.
So I'm pretty fortunate to conduct those players.
Oh, you make eye contact all the time when you're conducting. Well, that's really unusual. You want to say their names again?
Allison Johnson, Carrie Harger, Alexandra Dotson, and Sydney Grenier. Did I say the last name right there?
Yes.
Grenier, okay. And it's also cool, the final piece that Mary has programmed with the concert band by Jennifer Higdon, Rhythm Stand. And Jennifer Higdon is a Pulitzer Prize-winning composer, just master composer, highly respected across the world. And she's writing some really, really nice music for band as well here and there.
Mm-hmm. She's also been adding to the world of concertos for all kinds of solo instruments.
You're right. Mm-hmm.
I think she's like a self-taught flutist too. So
I didn't know that. You would know that.
You know, feels like Jennifer is someone that I need to champion.
That's right.
Yeah. So Rhythm Stand from 2004, being the oldest piece on this on this concert band program. Mm-hmm. The newest piece, you'd think 2019, but no, it's actually 2020. Annalise Levesque's Short Movements for Trombone Quartet. And Scott, I have to check with you on the air here, but was that one of the tracks that you sent along? Or
no, the one of the first tracks we sent along is the opening for the Wind Symphony portion of
the
concert.
Got it. The Fanfare?
Fanfare Canzonique by Brian Balmages. And Brian is known for just, again, extremely prolific composers, writing just thousands and thousands of pieces, it seems like, and has written this terrific tribute to the music of Gabrielli, the antiphonal brass music from St. Mark's in Venice. And so this is kind of a tribute. It's a modern tribute to that Gabrielli kind of sound, with the antiphonal choir off in the balcony and brass on stage.
Well, the antiphonal sound comes from the shape of the church, right?
Right? Mm-hmm.
I mean, Gabrielli was a church musician and was taking advantage of one of the greatest cathedrals in Rome or Italy,
Venice.
Yeah. Okay. And so he put the brass people up on
the
balconies and had them play back and forth for that sound. This is reminiscent, or
there's a quote or two from an actual Gabrielli piece, but it goes into some more modern harmonies and some more modern treatment of the idiom, but it's definitely an homage to that style.
Let's give it a listen. It will be performed by the Wind Symphony under the direction of Scott Borma on Sunday at 3:00 in a concert featuring both the concert band and the Wind Symphony. And details are online at the School of Music website, but all you really need to know is 3:00, Miller Auditorium, and no admission will be charged. It's open to everyone. Let's hear, is it
Balmages.
Balmages. Brian Balmages' Fanfare Canzonique from 2003. Just glorious, a live recording, glorious music for brass. Sorry, saxophonists and clarinetists and flutists, I'm not missing you on that one. That's just a taste of what's coming up this Sunday at 3:00 in Miller Auditorium, when the concert band and then the Wind Symphony, led by Scott Borma, will take the stage. This piece, I've mislocated the, there it is. Okay, Fanfare Canzonique by Brian Balmages. And that's just the beginning of the Wind Symphony portion of the concert.
Yeah, then we move on to a piece by Edward Elgar that is very underknown, I guess is my best description. our graduate student in wind conducting, Rob Abend, has chosen to do a project this year on famous composers, not so famous pieces of theirs. And he came across this piece by Elgar called The Crown of India. It's a five-movement work, and it's been out of print for years. Nobody plays it. Nobody knows about it. And he's found these parts online, and he's put together a critical edition score and has rehearsed, and they'll perform it probably for the first time, I don't know, in 50 years on our stage on Sunday.
This reminds me, you know, of how the British Empire included India,
right.
And
mm-hmm.
Edward Elgar was this iconic British composer.
It's a really terrific piece.
Is there some reference to India in the
music? There are some influences to Indian styles here and there, but it's not primarily that, right. But it nods to it here and there.
There are numerous portions to this, an introduction, a dance of the Nauch girls, a warrior's dance. So he's certainly playing up some of the empire themes,
right. Mm-hmm. Yep.
from the turn of the last century. And Edward Elgar still, I think we struggle to name more than three major pieces, including the graduation march.
Right, Pomp and Circumstance.
Yeah, the Pomp and Circumstance, the Enigma
variations,
and that cello concerto.
Yeah.
Brilliant.
Yeah, beautiful music.
But it's wonderful to get to hear more from this
right.
composer, who's a household name, but we don't always know much beyond his
right.
most famous works.
Yep.
Who is conducting the Elgar?
So Rob, that put together the edition, is the one rehearsing and conducting the piece.
Oh, great.
And he is about to finish his master's degree this semester, and he's shopping for graduate schools to get his Doctor of Musical Arts degree. And he's gone today at one of the schools auditioning, so he's looking forward to the next chapter.
Yeah, that's a big part of your job is, you know, taking a young graduate student and making sure that by the end of a short period mm-hmm. of time, they'll know a
right.
path forward.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think he's going to be a star.
That's great. That's second on the Wind Symphony program. Keep going, please.
Yeah, so then we were inviting back a friend of our program, Lindsay Kesselman. She's a soprano vocalist and sang with us about 4 years ago when we performed at the CBDNA convention at Iowa State. And she did her undergrad at Michigan State, so she's familiar with the Michigan area and has a lot of contacts here. And she's just developed into this really premier vocalist. She sings with ensembles across the country. She's constantly on the road singing, a lot of times with bands. There are a lot of new band works that have been coming out recently that feature soprano soloist, and it's just a really unique and wonderful color and adding lyrics to our usually unlyricful concerts.
It is a surprise to me to picture, you know, a soprano soloist with band, although I don't see why not.
Right, exactly. Well, four years ago we did this piece also by John Mackey, Songs from the End of the World, which told the story, one of the stories from the Odyssey, Homer's Odyssey. And this one is written also by John Mackey. It's called Places We Can No Longer Go. And it goes a completely different place. It's a pretty profound piece in that several years ago, his mother was diagnosed with dementia. And he posted online about it. And John's a very popular, he's got a popular online presence. He's very in touch with the band community especially. And he was pretty immediately reached out to by Gary Hill, the director of bands at Arizona State University, and said, you know, this is a piece in that. Maybe you should write something, a tribute to your mom, and kind of tell the story of it. And at first he was like, no, I can't do that. That's too rough. And he got to thinking about it, decided to write a piece of what he went through, what she went through, what their family went through. And came up with this pretty monumental 24-minute work that actually decided to, as far as the libretto, he decided to go backwards in the story. So the piece starts with the vocalist spewing kind of nonsense words and showing the late stages of dementia, and throughout the piece gradually kind of returns to when they knew each other. I actually get choked up every time I think about it. It's a really, really personal piece.
Yeah. So many people in the United States are touched by this and are caring for loved ones who are with dementia.
One thing really is really special about Lindsay, beyond her, just the, when she opens her mouth, these beautiful sounds come out. It just portrays the character so magically. It's just going to bring you into the story and really makes a dramatical, meaningful, memorable experience.
Well, you mentioned the libretto. Did he end up writing his own text?
His wife, A.E. Jocks, I don't know if I'm saying that correctly, but is her name, and she writes the librettos for the pieces that he composes for soprano. And it's really, really beautifully done. I should also say, sadly, his mom passed away a couple months ago. So the piece was premiered back in April, and then she passed away after that. And one thing that's really special about the music is that he relays stories of, she wouldn't recognize him or know anything, but maybe something would come on the radio and his mom would suddenly say, "That's Scheherazade." And she's a flutist. She was a flutist, and so really connected to a lot of flute repertoire. And other examples are Debussy's Syrinx and Afternoon of a Faun, Tchaikovsky's Second Piano Concerto, Ravel's Daphnis and Chloe, and so snippets, little moments of those pieces, kind of appear for a moment throughout this piece that we're going to play on Sunday.
That sounds like an important piece.
Oh, yeah.
It has yet to be recorded. We can't have a sample of that today.
You have to be there on Sunday.
I think it'd be tough to just have a sample. I mean, this sounds like an experience from beginning to end. If anyone out there in the Alzheimer's care or dementia care community is listening, this might be an important piece to put on your radar. And it's a free concert Sunday at 3:00. The piece is called Places We Can No Longer Go. And that title makes a lot more sense now that you've talked about it a little bit. The composer's name is John Mackey, and Lindsay Kesselman will be the soprano soloist. So really a highlight of this program, the centerpiece.
One of the challenges was, how do you follow that? How do you follow a piece like that? You don't want everybody just kind of in a dark place leaving a concert. And so we decided to follow it up with a kind of an encore for her by Eric Whitaker, who is probably the most famous vocal or choral composer out there. He's also written some really terrific band pieces. And he wrote this piece for soprano based on the child's story, Good Night Moon. Many of us have probably had that read to us as children. And so it's just a sweet little piece that will follow. Unfortunately, there's not a band recording that I could find, because it was originally written for, I think, harp and strings, and then for orchestra, and then was a new addition for band. So the recording I have is of an orchestra playing with, but the great Hila Plitman is singing. So it's kind of a taste of what the piece is, if you give a taste of that.
Kind of a lullaby after the John Mackey piece. I'm with Dr. Scott Borma and Dr. Trey Harris, and we are previewing live music from the Wind Ensembles at Western Michigan University concerts coming up Sunday at 3:00 in Miller Auditorium, as well as Monday night at 7:30 at Miller Auditorium. We'll be learning a little more soon about the symphonic band concert that Trey will be conducting. Here's a setting of Good Night Moon by Eric Whitaker.
In the great green room, there was a telephone and a red balloon and a picture of the cow jumping over the moon. And there were three little beds sitting on chairs, and two little kittens. Good night, noisy.
Good Night Moon, a famous children's book and beautiful setting of Good Night Moon, a music by Eric Whitaker and the soprano on that recording, not the same as the soprano that will be featured Sunday with the Wind Symphony of Western Michigan University. If you tuned in during the music, we're previewing cornucopia of sounds and styles that the University Wind Symphony as well as the concert band will present on Sunday at 3 o'clock in Miller Auditorium. And then on Monday night, Trey Harris will be conducting the symphonic band, and you'll be actually sharing the same soloist. Lindsay Kesselman will come back as a featured soprano for another work. And Trey, we're going to talk about that momentarily. I just wanted to add that Lindsay is a Grammy-nominated soprano who's really carved out a unique place in concert music, especially by collaborating with composers and directors of wind bands. Who knew?
Yeah, no, it's really great. They're keeping her busy because she's singing everywhere.
That's wonderful. And we're lucky to have her for a couple days
right.
and a couple opportunities to hear her and the students of Western Michigan University. I mentioned that Mary Land will be conducting the concert band on Sunday, so there are three of you. How many actual students come through this program in a semester or a year? I mean, there is enough for three huge bands plus a marching band.
Yeah.
Yes.
Marching band, about 300 students.
Right. And this semester, the concert band is sitting at around 110 students in that group. So with each semester, it seems Mary and just her wonderful personality is just reaching out to more and more students.
Pied Piper.
Yeah, that
Pied Piper. Did you say?
she's just bringing them in. It's unbelievable, and to hear them play, it's.
Yeah, she's a master teacher.
It's fantastic.
Wow. Well, she's not here to hear the compliment. maybe her ears.
We'd say that if she were here.
I'd say it to her face too.
That's wonderful. So hundreds of students. Being able to grow and work on pieces, and some of them will go on to get performance degrees, others maybe education, and others something completely
different. Music
therapy,
yeah. All kinds of things.
Yeah, so, but great opportunity for ensemble playing at Western Michigan University in the School of Music. So for this symphonic band concert, Trey, what were some of your thoughts? What did you want to put together?
Well, you know, it's interesting working with the symphonic band. There's so much growth that happens in that ensemble over the course of the academic year that it's fun to push them. So this concert, and this is the only of our four concerts this year that is not shared with one of the other ensembles. So it's a lot of music, and a lot of it of very high difficulty. So I wanted to open with something that is quite welcoming. I chose Malcolm Arnold's Prelude Siciliano and Rondo, which was initially written for British Brass Band, mm-hmm. and then John Painter at Northwestern University back in the 20th century transcribed this piece for winds, and it's become a staple in our repertoire. But it opens big with just almost a fanfare type sound in the brass, and then moves to one of the most sweet and sticking melodies that you'll ever have. Even though that's the first thing on the concert, that's the thing that everyone's going to whistle on their way out, is the second movement of Prelude Siciliano and Rondo.
So with Malcolm Arnold, I always kind of picture this sarcastic sense of humor, but this sounds like
that's
a straight
the third movement.
Oh.
yeah, he ends the piece with a rondo, and it is just as playful and sarcastic as you you would predicted. Yeah. Yeah. But that Siciliano is, it is one of the most beautiful melodies that's in our repertoire. So that one's, so that's pretty wonderful. And then we're following that up with Michael Colgrass's Old Churches. Michael Colgrass is a Pulitzer Prize winning composer who passed away last year. And when I heard that, I had the good fortune of meeting him about 12 years ago. So I, and it was a fantastic conversation. So when I found out that he passed away, I wanted to include him on the program. And he got into writing music for young bands in the late 90s, early 2000s. And this was kind of his first foray into that. And it includes a lot of aleatoric sounds. The percussion section plays only on bells and kitchen bowls, so that they're replicating the sounds of old churches in kind of Gothic Europe. And it's he uses old church modes, and you don't hear any major triads in this one. Mm-hmm. But it's he has figured out a way to turn the modern symphonic band or wind ensemble into very intimate and old group, which is a pretty neat thing.
His name is Colgrass. Where did he spend his career?
He grew up in Illinois, but he, I think he went to school in New York.
I think so. Yeah. Isn't he Canadian?
He very well could be.
I think he originated in Canada.
Okay. But yeah, he...
we're figuring it out on air, yeah. I guess.
Oh, that's the way that you want to do it. Right.
It's okay. Just say, I got to
thanks
look
for
it up.
Asking, Kara.
Sorry, Scott.
I do know that he spent some time in New York. I know he did some training as a mime. Like he was all-encompassing as a performance artist. Just a brilliant, brilliant composer. And what's great about the Old Churches piece is you hear some of the sounds that we're familiar with from his more acclaimed works, The Winds of Nagual and Arctic Dreams and things like that, but in this piece that was written for a much younger ensemble. And the students are having a good time with it. It's obviously technically pretty simple for these students, so we get to really dig into what he was going after and things like that, which is fun.
Ensemble work.
Right.
You know, when it's technically difficult, you often don't quite reach the point where you know everyone else's part.
Well, and I believe that the ensemble work that students do at universities becomes the synthesis of the other classes that they're taking. So the ability to really think about the music theory and the ear training and all those things and actually put them into practice in real time. So this sort of work helps them do that a little bit.
Old Churches by Michael Colgrass is followed by a very famous composer, a piece by Richard Strauss.
Right, and this is actually a piece that he wrote for voice and piano. And in the late 1950s, Albert Oliver Davis, who was a composer in the mid-20th century, transcribed it for winds, and it's since become a very important piece in our repertoire. And the Symphonic Band graduate assistant conductor, Cody Edgerton, is conducting this and doing a fantastic job of it's what Strauss was really masterful. I mean, there are many things that he was masterful at, but he'll take three notes and play them in succession, and you'll hear something different every single time. And that's what this music does. It's the theme is just very simple, three notes. He'll change what's going on underneath it so that it means something different just as the piece progresses. And it's beautiful. The piece is titled Allerseelen, which translates to All Souls Day. So it's meant to be something of a requiem type feeling.
Kind of a holy piece.
Right. It's yes.
Yeah. Huh. So. That's true. I've always experienced Strauss as this tangled web I could never even begin to figure out because of that harmonization, really advanced harmonization. Mm-hmm.
The romantic period would not be there. Or it definitely wouldn't have moved away from it. Because
he's a culmination of that.
Just brilliant, brilliant composer. And Davis's transcription captures what the piece is really about. So that's one of the great things.
I'm speaking with Trey Harris and Scott Borma, both of whom will be leading concerts for Wind Ensemble at Western Michigan University. There's a joint concert by the Concert Band and Wind Symphony on Sunday at 3:00 in Miller Auditorium. And then again, Monday evening, 7:30, the University Symphonic Band will perform. And we're just looking at that program right now with Trey. Army of the Nile? Is that a sort of a classic?
It is.
Band
it's a
piece?
British march, and I put this program together and was just a series of pieces that I'm very excited to do with the ensemble. And what I noticed is I had the Kohlgrass and then the Strauss, and then what I have programmed after the march is another very serious and intimate work. And I needed something of an amuse-bouche or a sorbet to kind of cleanse the palate so that the audience can really enjoy fully everything that's on the program. And this is one of my favorite British marches, Army of the Nile. And it's a little bit different in that, like, there's a muted trumpet part, which when we think marches, we don't think of players like inserting mutes or things like that.
No.
But it does have a muted trumpet feature in the trio, and it's just a lovely little march that I think the students are quite enjoying. And its role on the program is just to sort of allow everyone to exhale a touch.
Not to be too dorky about it, but it's almost like you use the Malcolm Arnold structure of a prelude, Siciliano and Rondo, once again with the churches and Allerseelen and Army of the Nile.
I appreciate you saying that. I'll take that. I'm not sure that I was that far ahead of the game, but you're absolutely right. That's
okay.
What it is.
And by the way, could I say that the Wind Symphony played Army of the Nile three years ago before you got here? So yet another great minds.
Let's jump to the Della Gioia to give a little preview of that, and then we'll finish with this piece by James Moberly, which features Lindsay Castleman again. A Fantasies on a Theme by Haydn. That sure makes me think of Brahms.
Right.
But Norman Della Gioia, what did he do?
Well, so he wanted to pay homage to this to Haydn in a way, and he was. In the mid 20th century, Della Gioia was a very popular composer for band with the Variants on a Medieval Tune and Scenes from the Louvre and things like this. And the Fantasies, he didn't want to make it a theme in variations, but he did want to kind of play around with what's going on. So one of the really neat things about this piece is it opens up with a statement of the theme, but you actually don't hear a full statement of the theme for the first 45 measures. It's just he's toying with you just from the start, and then you finally get it. And like we're talking about with the program, you can finally exhale a little bit. It's like he's been using a lot of Hockett play and bouncing the melody around the band, and then finally you get a statement from the flutes of this is the melody we're talking about for this 13-minute piece. It's very, very smart.
And he was a smart guy.
Yes, yeah. He was a smart guy. And once again, it's like you move on to the fantasy, the other fantasies, three fantasies, the second of which is just stunning and romantic and allows for expressive nature in the music, whereas the first and third fantasies really stick with the original tempo of the theme, and it's somewhat straightforward, but he bounces it around and just messes with it quite a bit.
So you're bringing back a bandmaster whose works probably will never not be in the repertoire.
I hope not.
Norman Della Gioia finishing up the concert Monday night. It's free at 7:30 p.m. in Miller Auditorium. Details on the program online at wmich.edu/music/events. And now just before we go, a couple of words about Words of Love.
Right. So I was brought on the faculty here in July and starting to program and talk about what I wanted to do with the symphonic band. And Scott sent me his programming for the Wind Symphony for the year. And I saw that in February he was bringing soprano soloist Lindsay Castleman to campus. Well, I actually did my undergraduate with Lindsay. So I was very excited to see her name on the program and even more excited to see that the symphonic band had a concert the day following Wind Symphony. So I went to Scott and I got an idea. What if we extended Lindsay's stay and she performed with the symphonic band? And he was very supportive of that. And this piece, Words of Love, is by Rome Prize winner James Moberly. And I was fortunate enough to be present at the premiere of it in Kansas City about 12 years ago. And it's one of those pieces that greatly influenced my own musical development. The way that James Moberly uses color and the way that he adjusts the instrumentation constantly through the band so that you hear something different through the entirety of the work, but it still has such wonderful architecture and gets you from point A to point B. it was almost like a perfect storm where here we are, this wonderful soprano that I've known for almost 20 years, and it's just it was one of those things that's let's make this happen.
This is going to be a personal highlight for your year, clearly.
It is.
On
it
Monday.
Is.
And it's so nice to share it with the public too.
Right. And the piece. So just to give a brief description, James Moberly's father wrote love letters to his mother long time ago, and when Moberly's father passed away, his mother found some of these letters and showed them to her son. And he wanted to pay some sort of tribute to his father. So he used one of the letters as the text for this piece. And it is just the way that he incorporates the color that the wind ensemble can add to match the text. There's one moment where the singer says, "And in purple twilight falls," and you swear to God that you see the color purple in what he does. It's stunning.
I can't help but think that pursuing music in life and as a career is bringing beautiful complexity to being human. It's preparing this music. I'm talking to two people who spend hours and hours and months and days on trying to evolve their group and create concert experiences where listeners have a moment to be human in a way they don't get to be human all the time. And live performance is really where you end up just naturally opening yourself up to new things and a lot of beauty. And I think it's represented here on these concerts. Any final thoughts for Sunday and Monday?
No, we're looking forward to it.
I can't say it better than you just did. So,
right. How do you follow that?
Let's hear words of love to take us to the top of the hour. And Trey and Scott, come back soon. This is great. And I look forward to the spring conference.
Yes.
Hopefully, you'll be able to bring your guest artist from Louisiana. What was her name?
Julie Giroux.
Oh, wow.
On April 9th.
Very exciting. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you.